This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 51, for Monday, February 9th, 2009. Dangling Links. This week, Dave and Larry have an interview on cross-platform development with Ed Thompson of TeamPrize. TeamPrize creates clients for Microsoft's Team Foundation Server that run on Mac, Linux, and Windows, too. Let's listen in. So, Dave, we're still in downtown Chicago. This has been a, you know, quite a day for the Thirsty Developer. We're on
Studio
our,
PB.
Yes, we're on our third podcast of the day, and we're actually going to shift gears a little bit. We're actually going to talk about developing a multi-platform application.
Yeah.
And our special guest is Ed. Ed, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. I'm Ed Thompson. I work for a little company in Champaign called TeamPrize.
So, Ed, what does TeamPrize do?
So, TeamPrize is a little company, and we have a couple of different products. One of them is the TeamPrize plugin for Eclipse. What that is a plugin for the Eclipse IDE that allows you to talk to Microsoft Team Foundation Server and get all its version control, work item tracking, build and test integration from in there. And then we have a couple of other products, TeamPrize Explorer, which is a cross-platform standalone application. And then TeamPrize Command Line Client, which is, you know, as the title suggests, a command line-driven application for Team Foundation Server across multi-platforms.
Yeah, and your tools are all for developers, right? This isn't, you know, an end-user type application, right?
Yeah, not at all.
Right, these are not for human beings. These are for developers,
that's
right?
That's right, that's right. You know, you people know. Ask me what I do, and they kind of glaze over after a little while. Yeah, it's very developer-centric.
You know, so Team Foundation Server is part of Microsoft's Team system. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, source control, back-end server. It's got a lot of functionality. I'm sure we'll hit on that as we go along. But when Microsoft shipped it, and ever since then, we've never had a cross-platform version of it. And there was a real, you know, market niche for this because it's actually, you know, it's a really good application lifecycle management source control tool, you know, however much you want to, you know, get out of it. And a lot of companies, and I've worked, you know, in several industries, you know, several different companies. Most companies have, you know, developers working on multiple platforms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or at least a development team working on, you know, other platforms, whether it's, you know, Java or Mac or whatever, legacy stuff. Very few organizations are all .NET and all, you know, working in Visual Studio.
And we shouldn't even limit ourselves to necessarily talking about the developers because designers, you know, who are on the product team actually have to check, you know, things in and out also, right?
Sure.
And a lot of designers, you know, run Mac as their native client.
Definitely.
So you guys were actually formed shortly after Team System, as a company, you were formed shortly after Team System shipped with the intention of we're going to build the cross-platform version that Microsoft didn't ship.
Yeah, exactly right. Actually, just to, you know, correct you a little bit, sorry.
Oh, sorry, it's okay.
We actually shipped 1.0 right after Team Foundation Server 2005 was shipped.
Okay.
So we actually started a little bit before.
All right. And you guys were actually a spinoff, or your parent company is, Source Gear, right?
That's right, that's right. We kind of spun right out of a little company called Source Gear. And what they do is also version control tools. So a lot of the TeamPrize team came over from Source Gear. I worked on a couple of Source Gear products. Even though TeamPrize is a young company, we have a lot of version control experience already.
Right, and everybody knows, you know, the founder of Source Gear, right? Eric Sink, right?
That's right.
I read his blog, you know, read his blog for years, you know. I'll never forget, I did the total Chris Farley thing at TechEd a couple of years ago. You know, I went up to, you know, to introduce myself to Eric Sink and just, you know, did the whole, oh, I'm not worthy thing, you know. No, that was Wayne's World, right?
That was Wayne's World. However, if Eric Sink is actually, he's more known for not a software legend, right?
Yeah, I think so. I remember that website and that little gimmick at the trade show.
If anybody remembers that, then they're just as old as me, I suppose. But
So in the context of TeamPrize and the different software solutions you ship, we're going to talk about how to build a cross-platform application.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about architecture, right? Because you're not building the end-to-end solution. You're building the presentation or the client tier
right.
for the team system backend, right? So there's a couple things that were just kind of taken care of for you automatically. You had the backend, you had the data model that you were tapping into.
Exactly so.
Okay. Team system will actually expose everything as web services, right? Are you using the web services?
Yeah, definitely. So we talk right to the web services. You know, a lot of people ask why we don't use Microsoft's existing API for Team Foundation Server, which is really great. I mean, it's a really good C# API for talking to TFS. problem is it's a really good C# API for talking to TFS, you know, and that. So if we wanted to limit ourselves to the Team Price plugin for Eclipse, for example, and only run on Windows, maybe we could make that work.
But that would kind of, you know, run against, you know, what you guys were trying to do, which was, you know, be the client that Microsoft didn't ship, right?
Exactly so.
And you could have used, okay, let's talk about this architecturally, right?
Right.
You could have, on Windows platforms, used the existing ones.
Sure.
And on other platforms, used another one. That sounds like a recipe for disaster, that it works on one version of Eclipse and doesn't work on another version of Eclipse, right?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of pain to me. I mean, we talked about looking at, you know, Mono, for example, to run the TFS API, but, you know, that sounds like even more pain to me.
And Mono is?
I'm sorry, Mono is a free, you know, .NET runtime for cross-platform. It'll work on Windows, Linux, a couple others.
It's an open source project that's backed by Novell.
It is backed by
Novell,
yeah.
And they do some really cool things. I mean, I think it's interesting. When they started the project years ago, I was like, oh, that'll last 6 months, right?
Right.
But it's gone so far as to the fact that, you know, they've actually created a Silverlight, you know, equivalent called Moonlight. You
right.
know? And that's absolutely cool.
Yeah, it's
that
awesome.
That's the way of doing it. There are some differences if you look at their implementation of the full .NET framework.
Right.
And the .NET framework.
Absolutely.
Like, the one I always like to point to, and it, you know, is, system.windows versus system.wine, right? The
right.
namespaces, don't match up, right?
Right?
So you, as somebody who would look at that as a potential solution, would go, oh, wait, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it, you know, we didn't look too heavily into it, but, you know, I think it would have been a lot of pain for what we would have gotten out of it. So we just,
I think in 2009 it would be more viable than it was probably when you guys started in 2005 timeframe, right?
Absolutely. And you know, I'm actually the Mac guy at work, and you know, I don't know if that's going to win me any fans on your podcast.
We have plenty of Mac listeners.
Oh, sweet.
Matter of fact, you know, I will confess that I own a Macintosh. You know, yes, I OS X Leopard a MacBook. You know,
wow. Do they let you do that and still work at Microsoft?
Absolutely. Competitive analysis. That's what we call it.
Well, and actually, I do run it dual boot with Vista, though.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I haven't upgraded that to Windows 7 yet. You know, I do some, you know, I do some things on the Mac. You know, it's I think it's a really interesting platform, and fundamentally, I'm a technologist first and foremost. I love technology.
Sure.
So I'm going to play around with other platforms, you know, quite a bit. I'll even talk sometime about the version of Ubuntu I've got running on a virtual machine.
Awesome.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, people look at us as Microsoft evangelists. Well, part of being that is that to be an evangelist, you have to like technology. And as Larry said, we're technologists, so we enjoy anything that's technology related. Keep an eye on what's going on in the industry and everything else. But that's neither here nor there. We're here to talk about Team Price.
So you're the Mac guy at Team Price.
I am the Mac guy.
So you are responsible for developing the Mac version of the client, or what does it mean to be the Mac guy at Team Price?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, so all of our stuff is written in Java. We have a, you know, a really cross-platform API. We talk to Eclipse, and we use their more or less windowing toolkit. We don't use the standard Java toolkit. We use something called SWT, which Eclipse invented, and what it does is write to native widgets. So, you know, you run some old crappy Java application, and all of a sudden it's purple, or, you know, it's got funny-looking buttons, and it doesn't feel right at all. SWT gets around that. It writes right to the native, you know, Win32 on Windows. It talks to Carbon on OS X. It talks to GTK on Linux. So, you know, everything, you know, more or less looks right.
So it's a great abstraction layer.
Oh, it's perfect.
If you talk about the, you know, from an architectural standpoint.
Right. It's wonderful for us. But, you know, when I say I'm the Mac guy, you know, you kind of come in and, you know, the first pass at something, some guy is working on our, you know, on our Windows UI, for example.
By the way, just looking at you, we'd never guess that you're the Mac guy.
Man, I can't tell if that's sarcastic or not.
No, it's a compliment, man.
All right.
Looking sharp. He's got the Chuck Taylors on. He's got the earrings and the bar through the ear.
Yeah. Okay. So the sarcasm was confirmed.
Don't insult our guest until after the podcast, Dave. That's the rule. So.
So.
No, no. I'm just wishing I could look as cool as him. That's all.
Oh boy. No, but you know the Windows guy. He'll check in some code and it looks great on Windows. But you know, maybe things aren't quite lined up the way they're supposed to be on the Mac. So I kind of make another pass through on the UI layer there. So I mean, that's a pretty low hurdle for being the Mac guy, quote unquote. But
so you're actually, you know, that sounds like it's part development, part QA, right? That you know you kind of own the look and feel of the application on the Mac.
Yeah, I would say so.
How do you, okay, so I've got to ask this question. The Windows guy checks in everything. You know, he thinks it looks great. He's done his bit. You pull it down on the Mac and go, oh, that's not quite right. Let me make my changes. How do you keep from breaking the guy, you know, on the Windows platform? Because I could see this going, you know, like I don't like green eggs and ham all day long, right?
Sure. I get a little obsessive about it. You know, so I've got my Mac, of course, and then I've got, you know, Vista in a VM, and I've got XP in a VM with the, you know, dumbed down, really ugly, heavily boxy look that they used to have. I've got Ubuntu in a VM.
We call that classic mode, by the way.
Sorry, classic mode. Pardon me.
Not dumbed down square. You know?
Right. Yeah. Sorry about that. Classic mode. So, you know, I try to make sure that we look good everywhere for the most part.
So is it truly run right once, run everywhere?
Yeah, sure. Kind of. Well, it's not so bad. Java's got a lot of little idiosyncrasies, of course. There are things that it can't do. To be fair, we've got a fair bit of C code inside our products that we call from Java in order to do, you know, various things. For example, most of our authentication is done in native code. A lot of little utility classes, stuff like that.
Does Java ever talk to the web services directly, or are you always going through that C library? Or
Java is actually what's doing the communication with the web services. Back in the day, we thought about, actually before I was on this project, my boss pitched that we should do this in C. And I was out for a beer with him. He said, "Oh, I think we're gonna talk to web services in C," and I cried a little on the inside. But, you know, so it's all in Java, that part of it.
How do you find the, you know, because we still have interoperability conversations about Java and .NET.
Sure.
To this day, whereas, you know, me as a pure technologist, I say, man, we've solved this problem. It's called, you know, web services, right? Just make sure that architecturally that you're, you know, you've designed the web services properly, that you can do all that. Java is going to be a great web service client. .NET's an obvious web service client. You can implement the back end in either one. You know, there's still people that are looking at, you know, the old school technologies like JNI, where I can call an object directly.
Sure. And that's what we use to talk to our C. But I definitely wouldn't want to, you know, have a Java to C to C# interface. I mean, that'd get ugly real quick. But yeah, so web services have really worked out well for us. For the most part, I mean, there's a few little idiosyncrasies, like, you know, just the way C# handles data versus the way Java handles data. You know, enum's a good example. Enums in C# have a default, you know, spit them out over SOAP, and maybe you read them in on Java, and maybe they have a different default, for example. And so, I mean, little tiny things that we've got to deal with, but on the whole, it's been, you know, really straightforward talking web services.
Like in .NET, they have like web service enhancements to be able to, you know, easily communicate between .NET and web services. Are there similar libraries in Java that you use?
Yeah, there are a bunch, actually. Apache, the Apache Foundation, has done a really good job with web services, and we use a bunch of their stuff.
Okay. So what are you using? Because the web services, are you just doing typical just message transfers back and forth, or are you utilizing some of the WS star specifications, like, you know, the secure communications or anything advanced in that sense?
You know, I'm not the core guy.
You're the Mac guy.
I'm the Mac
guy. Why am I asking you that?
I make things look pretty. No, you know, it's actually pretty straightforward. We more or less use, there's a little bit of homegrown code in there to take the, you know, WSDL and splat it out into something we can use. And then it's actually really straightforward.
So,
kind of a Java bean, sort of.
So hopefully you can answer this. What is it? I mean, how do you feel the sort of web service API, the Team Foundation server is it solid?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. And especially coming from, you know, previous version control tools, you know, I don't want to name names, but a certain Microsoft version control tool didn't really have a good API to work with.
You can say Visual Source Safe, you know, it's, you know.
I'm not going to disparage it.
Well, it's, you know, it was, it grew up over 10 years ago. It was kind of aimed at the departmental, not the enterprise,
absolutely,
you know, level development. A lot of people have pushed the limits on what you can do with it. It was time for a good upgrade, you know, and, you know, Team System is that good upgrade.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I mean, the web service level of Team Foundation Server is beautiful. The back end is, you know, gorgeous. It sticks everything in a SQL database. And
it has true transaction support, which is one of the issues that you ran into with file-based, you know, repositories like, you know, VSS, you know. And
absolutely.
You know, if you compare VSS to other things at the time, you know, they all had the same issues.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. VSS was great for its time, but, you know, its time has come.
So I do want to talk about one thing, because, you know, as an architect, one of the things that, you know, I always, you know, tell people, it's like, you know, hey, it's great to have web services and reuse and all that. One of the real dangers is that anytime you call a web service as a core part of your application, right, not some optional thing, you know, that has, you know, extra benefit for you, but, you know, a core part of your application, you're taking a dependency and you've got versioning to deal with, you've got breaking changes and all that. You guys, you know, have really got this staring at you in the face, because there's no option. I mean, you are only a presentation layer,
sure,
you know, for these backend web services. So we've now actually done a couple of upgrades. You know, we had service packs for the 2005 timeframe. 2008, we got a new version of, you know, Team Foundation Server. Not a major release, but, you know, a lot of fit and finish stuff, a lot of performance enhancements, a lot of goodness for you. You know, and we're also, you know, looking at, in the next year, another version of it. Tell us about, you know, the upgrade path. You know, were there any issues, breaking changes?
You know, it's actually been really, really positive for us working with Microsoft. So, you know, our first version of our software talked to TFS 2005, and that was fine. TFS 2008 came along, added some new, you know, methods here, methods there, but on the whole, you know, nothing broke. There were additions. There wasn't anything removed. And I say that, and I'm not entirely sure that I'm right. So, you know, I mostly deal with version control. I know that build changed heavily between 2005 and 2008. And one of the guys on our team, Martin Woodward, prolific blogger, I'm sure he's talked about this at length. He would have been the one to see the pain between 2005 and 2008, and not me. So I've been really happy.
Martin's a Microsoft MVP.
He is.
You know, real thought leader on, like, you know, continuous integration and a bunch of other good stuff, right? You know,
very
fantastic
so.
Guy. We'll put a link in the show notes to his blog. You know, people can go check it out. But maybe we'll do a follow-up with him to talk about some of that stuff. I want to talk about, you know, one of the things is that, you know, you guys have an international application.
We do.
Right? And we haven't, you know, we're not going to talk about the number of people using it. I mean, there's a lot of people that use Team Price. A lot of companies, you know, have, like I talked about, either they have one development team that does jobs, you know, or, you know, there are some companies that actually are using TFS and they're 100% Java shop.
Right.
I want to talk about a little bit of internationalization, because you got a client running everywhere now.
Sure.
You know, and we did a show last year on the Thirsty Developer about, you know, called Globalizing and Localizing, that, you know, talked about some of the issues. How are you guys dealing with those things?
You know, not as, this is kind of part of my guilt, not as well as I wish we had, but there's actually been not a lot of demand for internationalization in terms of, you know, language support. We don't have language support in our client. You're going to get English. You know, we try to do as best we can in terms of, you know, localizing strings. You know, Turkey's got the funny eyes, for example. We do as best we can, but right now it's all English. We really thought this would hit us in the Asian markets. But so far it hasn't been so pressing that we've actually done it.
Yeah, just so we're clear on this, is that your application, like when I have a you know, one of the things I can do is add comments on check-in,
yep,
right? I can type in whatever I want in there,
oh,
and
absolutely,
you guys just support that.
Absolutely.
Right? It's just the dialogue block boxes are actually English.
Right. All our prompts are in English.
Right. What about dates? Because, you know, I know that the French have the total opposite dates of us. You know, if you do 4/5/09, you know, is that May or is that April?
Right. We do pretty good with dates. For example, you know,
dates is a sensitive thing in version control, right?
Absolutely, it is.
You don't want to get those wrong.
You know, we normalize it to feed a Team Foundation Server, but after that, we turn it into whatever the user wants to see in their language and in their, you know, whatever the system's formatted for.
Yeah, and I don't think that if we look at tools for software developers,
mm-hmm,
it is a niche market, even though there are, you know, millions of software developers, right? And I think every one of them deals with, you know, who's not a native English speaker deals with the translation, you know, process.
Yeah.
I heard this story when I was in college that, you know, all COBOL programmers know English COBOL. you know, because that's the first, the first COBOL compilers were actually all written in English. And even if you were, somebody who was Russian, you learned English enough to write COBOL, for instance. So
Sure. This
is something as an industry, we kind of force the language thing on people. So I think that everybody's dealt with it. It's not like you're creating a business application and you're telling everybody, tough cookies, you're going to deal with our English interface.
Yeah, exactly. So I've really been a little bit surprised by that. I thought there would have been more cry for, dialogues that spoke the proper, current language. Back behind the scenes, Team Foundation Server supports, whatever. It's looking at files as just blobs of data. And, in text files, you can configure an encoding on them. So, it's got support down to that. So we think it's been a good trade-off so far.
Can we talk a little bit about how you guys test? Internally,
sure.
Not. I'm not talking about testing in the tool, because we know that the tool supports unit testing, and as part of a build you can fire it off. But when you guys are all ready to ship V.next point release, major release, doesn't matter, of Team Prize, because you guys are cross platform, you got to test on a lot of platforms.
Yeah,
right?
We do. It gets a little ugly. Actually, we're really close right now to a little point release 3.2. And so we're kind of in the QA mess right now. We got a great QA department. They bang on, a variety of different platforms, from operating systems to, we've got a plugin for Eclipse, and Eclipse isn't just an IDE. Eclipse is kind of an infrastructure unto itself for which you can write IDEs on. So, we don't just test in various versions of Eclipse. We also test in IDEs that are built on Eclipse, like, IBM has one. Adobe Flex Builder is built on Eclipse. And
I was going to ask, do you guys, actually Flex Builder?
Yeah, we support Flex Builder. We support, some really interesting IDEs. It's not just Java, really, so Flex.
Isn't there one for Elang that scientific big, data set language,
it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I know there's one for Wolfram's Mathematica. So you can write, Mathematica code in a fancy IDE now, and we support that. So you can check your Mathematica code into Team Foundation Server if you want.
Now, do you guys do that just because they're the other big technology company in Champaign?
that might be how that conversation started. I actually used to work at Wolfram, so there was a little bit of pride there in getting that to work.
Yeah, Dave and I have actually talked about doing a road trip to get those guys on the podcast, and then actually talk to the Source Gear guys down there.
Yeah, that'd be great. You should come down to Champaign.
Yeah, it's a nice little, it's a great college town,
It's beautiful.
So I'm actually kind of interested in talking about, going back to your kind of testing process.
Sure.
You kind of mentioned, you said you're at a 3.2 release.
3.2
right
is coming up.
Everybody always asks this question. I mean, these have been conversations that people have been having for, since I've had a career in software development, and probably even before me, but talking about, point releases versus kind of full version releases.
Right.
How do you guys determine that?
That's a good question. So far, it's been a little bit driven by Team Foundation Server version numbers. 3.0 came out kind of in lockstep with TFS 2008. 4.0 is probably going to come out more or less at the same time TFS 2010 comes out. And so that's kind of what's driving major version numbers. I mean, those are huge sets of features. 3.2 is actually, this is actually a really good question you ask right now, because 3.2 has a lot of new features. It fixes a ton of kind of obscure bugs. And so, internally we've been kind of like...
No. They're not bugs. They're just enhancements, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Enhancements. Yeah. Adds a lot of new enhancements. So internally we've been kind of like, man, this should almost be a full major version number. But, in our kind of our upgrade policy is, you get minor versions for free.
Right.
After, buying that. So 3.2 is going to be free for everybody. And so we're happy about that. But at the same time, it
free for everybody that's already bought a license.
Already bought a license of 3.0. Yep. Thank you. Let me clarify that.
Because your marketing department just, basically fell off their chairs when they heard that right now.
Yeah, kind of.
But yeah, like you said, it's different, I think, for a company who's selling software, so an ISV, versus somebody sort of like building applications for their corporation or their department or whatever.
Oh, sure.
Looking at, from a... Because you got to think of the psychology around that. Is like when you're selling software, it's like, does somebody need to buy 3.2, or should they get that because they bought 3.0?
Yeah,
right. So And then you can charge them more for 4.0.
Right? That's right.
As opposed to something that's 3.5, let's say. I've always been kind of curious just talking to people about who makes those decisions and why should you make the decision. You
know? Yeah. Like I said, Microsoft more or less makes it for us. Once TFS 2010 comes out, that's when we'll rev our major version. I don't know if that's, you know, the best thing or whatever, but it makes a lot of sense given that, you know, that given our support for that.
So we haven't asked you a question, and it's kind of an obvious one, is what do you use to write your code? And obviously we know what source control system you use, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you can't be checking this back into CVS or anything like that.
No, we eat our own dog food.
Right. So you guys are probably, you know, testing on the next version, using the next version to write the next version of...
Exactly.
You know, so you use TeamPrize as your source control,
yep.
Right? But, you know, what's your IDE?
I use Eclipse 3.4 right now. 3.5 is coming out soon. I'm kind of looking forward to that. It's got a lot of changes for the Mac, so I'm kind of excited about that. But yeah, I use Eclipse. Every once in a while, I'll downgrade to Eclipse 3.0 when we get to about this time in a release cycle, just to make sure that we haven't, you know, broken anything, that we're still backwards compatible down to Eclipse 3.0.
And that's for your kind of your QA hat, right? As
exactly.
the Mac guy.
Yes, exactly. that's more or less for QA. Eclipse 3.0 came out a long time ago, and sometimes we accidentally break things there and don't realize it until right about this time in a release cycle.
And that's as far back as you go from a support standpoint.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Tell us about some of the other tools that you might use. You know. Because I think a lot of people might be interested in just, you know, if they're looking at cross-platform development.
Sure.
What's on your desktop, really, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not everything, but what's...
Yeah, like we don't want to talk about that. No, you know, I spend almost all my time in Eclipse, in TeamPrize, because, you know, so for builds, we use Ant, and we fire that up right out of Team Foundation Server, actually. Team Foundation Server kicks off our Ant builds for our product. I spend a lot of time writing JUnit tests and running JUnit tests. And again, that's all handled by Eclipse too. And those also get fed back into TFS. So, I mean, what's on my desktop? Honestly, a terminal and Eclipse. That's about it.
Wow. Bare bones.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't expect that from the Mac guy, would you?
What do you use for a virtualization stack?
VMware.
Okay.
I use VMware Fusion.
Because you mentioned earlier that you got that... would you call it the butt ugly version of XP?
That's right.
The classic version.
I'm sorry,
the classic
version. Yeah, no, I use VMware Fusion mostly, running my bootcamp partition, which is Vista 64, and then of course I got some other virtual machines hanging around so that I can test stuff on various other platforms.
You know, kind of going back to the question earlier about write once, run everywhere. Oh, man, I cannot say that. Write once, run everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the sort of, like, you talked about nuances. What are those little nuances?
That's a really good question. So,
I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Came up with one good one today.
Well, you know, I mean, Java just has some strange things throughout strange version numbers. So here's an example. Setting files like readable and writable in Java. You know, you can set them readable but not writable in one version of a JVM, or writable but not readable in another. It's really ridiculous. So we've got to write some C code to do that. We've got to write some C code. For example, OS X has...
Before you leave, let's define JVM, because some of our listeners grew up on .NET. And...
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as Java goes, you've got various versions of the Java runtime. You know, you've got Java 1.2, 1.3. 1.4, and then Java 5, because Sun, you know, likes to do that with their version numbers sometimes. And so these are, you know, all sort of backwards compatible. Java 5 can run stuff that was built on Java 1.4, but they've all got some little, you know, idiosyncrasies. Then you've got various vendors shipping their stuff. IBM has a Java runtime. Sun has a Java runtime, and they're not always, you know, perfectly compatible.
And how do you take a dependency on that? You know, because the original theory was that you could take any JRE and swap it out for another one, but that didn't work out so well, right?
No, it works
because
pretty
of the,
well.
You know, well, if you stick to core functionality,
sure,
things are absolutely fine.
Yep.
But if you get into things that are, you know, supported on one platform but not necessarily supported on the other, the extensions or whatever, you
right,
know?
Right, right. Yeah, I, you know, it works pretty well for us, but, you know, at the end of the day, we end up writing some C code for some other stuff.
But you don't mandate any specific version of the runtime environment?
Right now, for TeamPrize 3 clients, it's Java 1.4 and higher.
Okay, but it doesn't matter who's...
It doesn't. You
okay.
know, we've had good luck with IBM and Sun, you know, BEA, whomever.
So, you know, looking at, you kind of mentioned earlier, like, the you know, VSTS 2010, TFS, you know, coming out, the next versions. What's in store for the next version of TeamPrize?
We,
is it making it easier for you guys? Is it making it harder?
Well,
is Microsoft doing the thing where they implement features that you've already done? So,
very rarely. We are kind of happy. Sometimes Microsoft does throw in a little feature that we got to first, and there's always a little pride there. But no, we play catch up a lot. I talked, you know, with Mario Rodriguez, who you had on the show not too long ago. You know, and I told him that I had the easy part of his job because he, you know, has to sit down and think about what these features do and what they look like in the UI. And once he's done, I just steal them. You know, I mean, we aim for...
You look at the reference implementation.
I want to be pixel for pixel identical to what he did on, at least on Windows. You know, I want the button right there. You know, I don't have to think about where any of this stuff goes. I just look at his, take a screenshot and say, okay, I need mine to look like that. No, we do play a lot of catch up. I mean, you know, TFS 2010 is going to have a lot of really cool new features. You know, branch visualization is really exciting. So that's something that we're going to have to tackle. You know, gated check-ins are a big new feature, and that's something we're going to have to do. I'm really excited about hierarchical wit, and this is actually something that seems, you know, really inconsequential, but TFS 2010 is going to add file properties. And this is actually really huge for us. This is something that we've kind of hacked around throughout. So, you know, some of our customers wanted to have symbolic links that they could check in. And some of our customers wanted to support Apple on the OS X file system has some metadata, like the resource fork, for example, that they wanted to be able to check in alongside their files. And so we've kind of...
And if you're a Windows developer, a symbolic link...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's
an alias, more or less.
Kind of a shortcut.
Shortcut.
Kind of. Yeah. Not exactly, but close enough.
Close enough.
You know, it's, so basically you're going to add a file into source control that is actually a link to another file.
Yeah, it's a pointer to another file. You know, it should take up...
Which gets kind of existential, because what if the other file disappears,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you could end up with dangling links, but yeah. So you know, a lot of like real Unixy things.
Wait. That's the show name, Dangling Links. Sorry, Ed.
I love it. I'm not sure what that means. Is that dirty? I don't know.
We may have to put an explicit tag on this one.
My marketing guy told me I should not swear so much in this interview, so I'm trying really hard not to.
So far, so good.
Excellent. You know, so there's a lot of, like, Unix-y things and you know, Mac-specific things that our customers have asked us to support for them. And we do the best we can in TFS 2005 and 2008, you know, checking in. For example, the Mac resource fork thing is something we added in, I think, TeamPrize 3.1. It wasn't too long ago. We kind of, you know, basically create a zip file of the data fork and the resource fork and check that in, more or less. It's not a real pretty solution, and properties, you know, we've kind of been asking Microsoft, well, could we check in properties alongside the file, and they're going to do that in TFS 2010, you know, not just for us asking, a lot of people have asked, but, you know, we're really excited to be able to put these in a nice little place inside TFS that's much less of a hack.
Yeah, so earlier we were kind of talking about some of the new features you guys are looking to implement, and one of those features was sort of a disconnected scenario.
Yeah, it's called, you know, working offline.
Yeah.
It's something that Microsoft added support for in 2008, and we followed not too long after that. Basically, you know, TFS is, the clients are very chatty with the server, and that's actually a good thing. So, you know, the server knows exactly what versions of every file you have. If you say, hey, you know, do a get, it can just, you know, optimize that based on its knowledge of what you have. The problem comes, like, let's say you've got a laptop on an airplane. Well, if you can't talk to the server, you can't, you know, work on your files. So you can actually go offline in Visual Studio and in our products, and then, you know, make your changes, do whatever you need to do, And once you get back connected to the server, you can return online, and it'll synchronize everything. It works more like a, you know, standard edit merge commit kind of system.
Now, can you only do that if you already have the files checked out?
Yeah, if you have them, locally, you don't have to have them checked out per se. For those of you who aren't familiar with Team Foundation Server, checking out a file means that you actually ask the server, hey, I'm going to start editing this file and start working on it, and then you go and make your changes. It doesn't mean checking out like it does in, say, CVS or Subversion.
Right.
So
it doesn't put, like, necessarily a lock on it.
Right.
Right. So that's actually really cool because that's – I know a lot of people run into those situations where, you know, you're working on your source code, but something happens in the network.
Right.
Now you can't get access to the source code you need to be working on.
Right.
So that solves a huge problem.
Yeah, it's a big advantage for us.
Yeah.
And for, you know, whomever. I spend most of my time, well, I spend a lot of time traveling. I'm not really in the office all that often. So yeah, work offline mode, as we call it, has been a big boon for us.
That's great. Like you said, you know, essentially dog food in your own application.
Absolutely.
That's great. So as far as, you know, resources, pointers, where we should go find out more about TeamPrize and what you guys are doing?
TeamPrize. So we've actually got, you know, a 30-day demo on our website. It's at www.teamprize.com, TEAMPRISE. And there'll be plenty of white papers and data sheets and all that fun marketing stuff for you. But you can actually just go download the product and use it today if you want.
Cool. Any blogs, anything you want to...
You know, actually, all our developers' blogs are on the front page of the TeamPrize website. So
let's go to TeamPrize.com.
Uh-huh.
Cool. So I think when we come out with 2010, I think we'd like to have you come back and kind of talk about some of the. We've kind of touched base with a little bit of some of the new enhancements around 2010, but it'd be nice to kind of go into further depth around that, especially what you guys are doing around TeamPrize to support that. So
yeah, that'd be great. We'd love to.
All right, Red. Well, I appreciate you for coming on Thirsty Developer.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. You do your beatbox again, Dave? Yeah, we got a blooper for the show now.